Wait, do we know our order and everything, or are we just going to roll with it?
We'll roll with it. You got your document up?
Nope,
I don't. Can you read? All right.
We'll figure it out.
That's okay. All right. All right, all right, all right, all right. I'll put this document in Dropbox so then I can look at it on my phone. Get out of the way, Mexican.
I had to look up why Ishmael doesn't get the same claim to the Holy Land as why Isaac. And I guess Muslims try to fight that all the time.
Uh-huh.
But it was only through Isaac that God said he was going to make his covenant.
Right.
Because I was like, wait a second. He's
the firstborn, so...
He should, and like in Jewish law, he should have. But then I went and read the text, and I was like, oh, it's only Isaac. Okay.
Are we talking religion on this podcast?
That's the whole Middle East.
I'm so in over my head.
Just, yeah. You're here for your looks.
This is affirmative action. That's what I'm doing here.
You're affirmative action.
Moral is diversity.
Yes.
All right, here we go, boys. Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. Well, I guess we shouldn't say this week anymore. Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this installment of your favorite podcast. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. To my right, via video chat, is the effervescent and bald Joe Ruiz. Joe, how are you doing?
Good, good. The quarterly edition of We Are Libertarians, we should start to say.
Shut up. And to my left is the ever-present Greg Lenz. Greg, how are you doing?
I am doing well, Chris. How are you?
Savior of the podcast once again. I left my SD card up at work, and Greg is a mensch. You went to CVS, you got a card, so thank you for that. You save the podcast as you usually do.
I feel like our opinions need to be heard, like any other millennial.
Exactly right. What I have to say is very important, and you will hear it and you will like it. It's nice to have Joe, and we can see Joe. It's almost like Joe's in the room. He's over there on Skype on the laptop. We've got a video chat going. He can look over here at you and I.
It's quite wonderful, actually.
I'll tell you what, he's getting the raw end of that deal.
You guys are the only ones that I get to use this technology with.
Oh, I doubt that very highly. Don't you ever go on a business trip and Skype back with the missus and hello, beautiful?
No, I don't go on business trips.
Oh, well, you should.
Yeah, so, I was talking about...
That's where Greg gets all his best venereal diseases.
Whoa. Wow.
All right, I'm just...
Oh, my.
Things went south so fast.
That did not take long.
We've been back 5 minutes. 5 minutes. Hold on, boys. What? That was a good joke. You can't deny that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
What is that? Are you going to get in trouble with your wife?
No, she does not listen. Oh, okay. I don't have a wife.
Good.
So, guys, David DiGiovanni on Twitter that follows us, he had asked, or he said something like he wanted to use legislators to force We Are Libertarians into having another podcast. I think in the absence of the show, people are actually adopting statism.
That's true. That's what we're here, according to Maya Axton, that's what we are here to do. Promote statism, love of the flag, love of the burned pieces of the flag. All this according to Maya Axton.
And thank God she doesn't actually get to decide what the reason each of us is here on Earth for.
Maya recently caused a bit of a controversy, as she does every
social
other
terrorism,
day, right?
An act of social jihad.
Yeah, it, really, if you're not friends with Facebook on Maya, you're missing a lot, okay? You need to go and... friend Maya, MIAHAKSTON, Maya Axton on Facebook. She burned a flag recently. And
good God, did she really?
She did.
Yeah, she wanted us to share it, and I just didn't respond to that message.
Because, oh, wow.
You know, I understand her point thoroughly, but it's an image that you've got to, if you want to get your point across, it's two different styles. Her style and my style. Her style is... shock you and then explain. My style is explain and then shock you.
Yeah. And technically, she committed a harmful act against the environment because there are paint chemicals in those fabrics.
Right.
And so I always err on the side of not harming the environment.
Listen, you love the environment. You drive a Prius?
Yes, I drive a Prius.
Right.
I believe very firmly in solar energy.
You're vegan?
I'm vegan.
You go out to the fields and suck in cow farts and swallow them.
Well, I don't like to talk about that, but now that you mention it.
It's a little-known practice that Greg is championing. Go to cowfartinhalers.com.
Even just being bald, you don't have to shampoo and conditioner and all that, so you're saving water.
Well, you know, that's what I always say is I used to have... tons of follicles, and then Obama was elected, and he redistributed to those who aren't so well off.
I read we had a news story on my work show about apparently the smell of sulfurous farts can cure cancer. Can you believe that? Most scientists can't. They've debunked it.
Is that Satan at work?
Satan at work saying that if you smell sulfurous hot farts, Joe, you're in luck today. Be cancer free.
Did you get this on Natural News?
No, it was like a legitimate study that was put out, but I guess it's been debunked for the most part.
I was gonna say you got it on subreddit conspiracy black flag. Right.
I heard it on Alex Jones, so it must be true.
So it's got to be true, yeah.
So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies, Dutch oven your husband tonight and tell him that you're really just helping him. Okay.
That is disgusting.
That is. Listen. It's
not
time for it's an era of feminism, okay? Women get to Dutch oven too. What are we talking about? What has happened to the show?
You quit Liberty for a while.
You think that we would sit and think about how we behave in public and then we come back and do this. Well, we are glad to be back. We as always are a little irregular. Joe, not as much. but we're always glad to be back, and we thank you all for your kind messages. Greg, nobody messages me, apparently. You were telling me this before the show.
I've been getting some Facebook messages from loyal listeners, mm-hmm. and you know what's funny is I get the blame, and you get the, like, we understand. And I'm like, you know what? Dear Leader has been absent in his, you know, pursuit of liberty and libertarian causes, and I didn't want to say anything, but you've been north of the border for quite some time this summer.
You son of a bitch. No, no, it's totally my fault. Greg, every week, like a mensch, again, says, hey, you want to do that podcast that we agreed to do? And I'm like, I don't feel like it this week. I'm busy. No. I think we should start doing this podcast again. What do you?
I would assume so. That's right. Probably a good thing. I mean, yeah. Who else is going to promote liberty if we don't?
I don't know. Barack Obama?
Crickets.
So,
edit in some crickets.
Has anything happened since the last time we were on the podcast? Anything at all, Greg? Anything exciting?
The world has gone to hell in a handbasket.
Oh. Well, wasn't it there this time last year and the year before?
Not like right now.
Really? Because it just feels like this time last year, gosh, I'll go back and look at the archives, what was going on. Every single time that we do this podcast, this will be like our 80-something, 90th-something episode. And it just seems like the world just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. What are we doing here if we're not improving the world? This would be episode 86. That's all, folks. So this time last year, we were talking about DUI stops and a moral foreign policy and Adam Kokesh getting arrested.
I remember that episode.
Yeah, so Egypt was kind of taking
that was the Tahrir Square protests.
Right. So, you know, should a military chaplain. Immigration bill.
Never going to happen.
That's what we were talking about this time last year. We were talking about an immigration bill, and we were talking a lot about Snowden still. So it doesn't seem like anything ever really changes. You know, in early August, we were talking about Egypt again. Only now it's Iraq that is imploding. And granted, Iraq is imploding in a much different, much more... shall we say, spectacular way.
Because we own
Egypt. In a negative way.
Egypt's democratically elected government was overthrown by a United States-backed military coup, and that military government has yet to step down.
Right.
Which, obviously, has caused some issues in the Middle East.
Ironically, so 2 years ago, because this show is a long-running show, I mean, we've been doing this since... March 8th of 2012, we were talking about Chick-fil-A. So that's what the big topic of July 2012 was. It was Chick-fil-A.
Was that called Praying the Gay Away?
Yeah, so we the Chick-fil-A.
I remember the Wilson Phillips Easter egg at the end of the show.
Yep. We also have the fallout of Obamacare, fireworks bans,
which today is extremely relevant.
Yeah. What?
Obamacare. Yeah. Huge ruling today in the appeals court.
Really? Tell us.
So today, three federal justices ruled that the way the language is written, only individuals who purchase their health insurance through a state-run exchange qualify for federal or for subsidies. If you purchase it like Indiana, like the 36 other states who don't have a state-run exchange, you are not eligible for subsidy. And they ruled that. So this is headed directly for the Supremes.
Now, wait a minute.
And I had mentioned this several times, yeah.
That doesn't seem fair, Greg.
Well, remember when Nancy Pelosi said we have to pass it to know what's in it?
Right.
Apparently she wasn't lying.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they would have realized that when they wrote the language of section, I believe it's 1311, section 1311 says that subsidies will be allocated to those who, in fact, go through a state-operated exchange. Section 1321 is where it talks about the federal exchanges. If a state decides to let the federal government have over or run the exchange for that state, like Indiana, like all the other states, and they ruled today, the appeals court did, that in fact you are not eligible for subsidy unless you are through a state-run exchange. Now, shocking. It is not to stop the subsidies because it's going to go to the Supreme Court. But I would bet you anything, if you read the text of the law and there's no debating it, the only argument the federal government has made is that in the spirit of the law, people understood that it was for everyone going through any exchange.
Sure, which the spirit of the law is usually BS.
It's pretty baffling, though, that they could write like 20,000 pages of law.
When somebody talks about the spirit of the law, that's sort of hindsight. It's a hindsight argument, usually. Well, that doesn't surprise any of us at all. I mean, Obamacare has exceeded every expectation we had as far as it being a failure.
Oh, yeah.
So,
government, Rand Paul once said on an interview, he said, it's not that government's inherently stupid, although that argument could be made, and he caught some flack for it. And this is pretty much a pure demonstration that government is, in fact, stupid.
Yeah. So, all right, well, let's talk about some of the foreign policy, because this ought to be mostly a foreign policy show. We'll touch on immigration a little bit. It's the perennial favorite every year. It seems around the summertime when it gets hot that we start talking about immigration, because nobody's actually really doing anything. So they're like, well, how can we gin up some fundraising? Let's talk about racism. if you want to listen, if you want to raise money, racism. Joe?
Is this why you've got me on the show today?
Can you send me a list of approved jokes that you won't actually be offended by, but I can make towards you so we can raise some money for the podcast?
I'm pretty sure nothing offends me.
Oh, well, you were talking to the masters of never mind. We should not
offending the unoffendable.
Yeah, let's not talk.
We offend the we're actually writing the sequel to Dr. Walter Block's book.
I mean, we had a pretty good string of jokes going in the chat today, but they weren't racist. They were just really, really crude.
Actually, you were violating us sexually is what you were doing.
That's not the case.
Joe, would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
I just asked if you guys are into fitness.
Uh-huh.
Anyways.
I would challenge anyone who wants to try and offend me. Send me your best shot on Twitter.
Greg,
at the
I'm
Joe
not participating.
Roots. Oh, I just need somebody to hold the camera for a minute. So let's, Greg, do you want to start talking about Israel and Palestine, or do you want to talk about Iraq first?
I'll tell you what, Iraq's going to be a little bit shorter. So okay. Israel, so let's start with that. The media has changed focus from Iraq to Israel, Palestine, Gaza.
Because really, doesn't that just feel like going to your grandmother's house? You know, if you're going to go visit somebody's house at Thanksgiving, don't you want to go to where you're most comfortable and it feels like the coziest? I mean, if you're going to talk about international foreign affairs and wars going on overseas, you know, Israel versus Palestine just feels like your grandma's house, whereas Iraq is like a haunted house where literally they're actually trying to kill you.
Yeah, they in fact issued an edict that the Christians had 24 hours to convert to Islam, leave, or be killed. Which is a pretty big deal, because that's actually in violation of the in the Quran, what the government is supposed to look like. Christians, any type of religion, even atheists, can live under the Islamic Caliphate, according to the Quran and the Hadith, as long as they pay the tax. And the leader, that al-Baghdadi of ISIS, came out.
I loved his rap album, by the way. I thought I saw him at the. I saw, what was his name again?
al-Baghdadi.
al-Baghdadi. I saw him perform at the Grammys. He was spectacular.
I keep waiting for him and Kanye to release another right. album.
Well, they're in a feud.
Yeah, there is. I mean, Kim K is a divisive figure.
Right.
But no, so what's going on is they actually are, they're a state, in my opinion. They're a state. They have taken control of parts of Syria. They have part of the Jordan border, and which is a really big issue. And it's inevitable they're going to take Iraq.
Uh-huh.
The thing the media is missing is that this is a Muslim war.
You might, because I made a joke, you might reiterate who they is just one more
time. Oh, ISIS, the Islamic right. State of Iraq, and technically it's Levant.
Okay.
So it's really ISIL. But now they're just going by the Islamic State. They want credibility. They don't want to be seen as an organization. They want statehood.
Right.
The thing that's missing, though, is all of a sudden Israel gets hit by Hamas, and the Palestinians are fighting back in the Gaza Strip for what they perceive to be huge injustices. The problem is, by ignoring what's going on in Iraq, they're also ignoring that ISIS is recruiting out of Palestine and already has an influence there. They are there, and that is what Israel fears most. So the media is acting like, how do we make this work? How do we have a two-state solution? Blah, 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 blah. And I can't help but think a lot of it is the media, and I don't think this is debatable, is overwhelmingly owned and controlled by Jewish shareholders.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Rightfully, after the Holocaust. Whoa. Rightfully.
Whoa. Okay, explain that.
Well, I mean, they felt the need to... They're still Holocaust deniers today. Mm-hmm. So they understood what the importance of controlling the mediums of communication are.
Joe. What?
Are you trying to tell me that Wall will never get funds from the Israeli lobby?
I was just saying that I've heard Joe deny the Holocaust. I mean,
oh,
I wasn't saying
oh,
that at all.
What? I have no... What?
Joe's the denier.
If you'd like
I
to write,
deny Chris's statement.
If you'd like the likely story from a denier. If you'd like to write Joe Ruiz, please write him at ruiz@wearelibertarians.com. All right, continue, Greg. So the Jews run everything. Where were you?
Well, no, I'm saying that they overwhelmingly influence the US news media because they have ownership of it. So all of a sudden it went from Iraq being a terrible crisis.
Well, but let's also look at it as if I'm trying to think how to put it, because we are walking a delicate line.
We are.
Trust me, we all love Jews here.
Well, yeah.
I'm just trying to have a thoughtful conversation. I think it's their part. They've been part of the American culture. It's just like Germans and Jews, Hispanics of various countries and ethnic backgrounds, Native Americans, it's all, they're part of the blending pot. And I'm not saying that people from the Middle East aren't.
No.
I'm just saying that it's not as large of a culture within the United States as maybe the Jewish culture is. And
no,
it wasn't
no.
here as soon as some of the others.
And
so.
Definitely not as, I mean, we did not fight a war for the Arab world.
Right.
So we...
But let's not pretend like we went to war in World War II for the Jewish people either, because...
No, we did not.
FDR certainly knew, and Churchill knew, and Eisenhower knew, and they really... It wasn't because of what was happening in the ghettos of... And the war was well underway once Hitler really ramped up his efforts, so...
Yeah.
You know, that's one... To me, one of the greatest shames of history is the fact that everybody really knew and maybe just didn't try hard enough to
it'd be the
save
modern
the
equivalent
peoples.
Of what goes on in the Sudan and Africa right now.
Sure. That's a great analogy. Yeah.
It isn't enough to send our troops in, but that was part of the moral crisis that was used to initiate American support of
sure.
World War II. But all I'm saying is that overnight the the media messaging went from Iraq and ISIS to Israel and Palestine. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know you guys haven't necessarily been following the news as much lately, but I have been watching it, and it was on a dime. It switched
because
focus.
The media's nature is something shiny, and there's something shiny. And again, they have reporters on the ground in Jerusalem on the scene. So they've already got the built-in infrastructure because they've spent decades reporting from that particular crisis.
Which has actually been harmful in this instance. I don't know.
Really?
Four young Gaza boys from Palestinian boys that lived in the Gaza Strip were playing on the beach outside of a hotel that a bunch of U.S. journalists were staying at. CBS journalists, NBC. And it's a beachside resort. They were kicking a soccer ball around. There were four of them. And an Israeli missile hit those four boys.
And injured. When was that?
That was on, let's see, that would have been Sunday, Saturday. And CBS pulled their correspondent home because they wanted to report on it. And this correspondent actually went down and was trying to help because many other young children were hurt. And this is not a target that Hamas had. I mean, Hamas does live within the people in Palestine.
Right.
But this isn't one of those highly, you know, dense areas. It's mainly tourists, and then it's foreign officials, it's diplomats. And Israel was sending a message that they're not going to be messed around with. And they have this missile defense system that the United States helped them develop called the Iron Dome that prevents missiles from hitting highly dense areas. And it's worked remarkably well. So right now there's been one Israeli killed by Hamas rockets, and there has been over, I think the number's actually over 140 Gaza citizens.
Residents. Let's talk a little bit about who Hamas is, because I think, you know, we listeners to this program, we've touched on the Muslim Brotherhood and some of these other organizations and what they exist, what the purposes are, both the public face and the back end. But let's kind of touch on that again. Can you explain the origins of Hamas and what is their function?
Hamas exists purely as a Islamic uprising within Palestine in order to promote more of the historical nature of Islam and the rise of Islam and their right to the claim of the Holy Lands.
Right.
So they are a bit different than like Ariel Sharon. Yasser Arafat was the leader of the PLO, who's now the Fatah party. And they're a nationalist organization. They look at Palestinians as we are a people, we are a country, we are not necessarily a theocracy. And so Hamas solely exists, and this is actually one of the more interesting wrinkles of it, to wipe Israel off the map, to push them into the sea. The problem is now they won the election, and Mahmoud Abbas is the leader of the other party, the Fatah party, and that's who we would like to see win, and we actually have tried over and over and over to do anything possible to get them to win by influencing their elections. But Hamas has support of the people, and the way Israel's reacted to being hit, which is you're allowed to defend yourself, but they've hit areas, and for whatever reason, they've hit areas that have been very damaging on a global scale where people are starting to support Hamas. It's been a real tough time for the United States to even justify action, for our allies to justify action. There are protests in Boston, in Indianapolis, in the support of Palestine. In France right now, it's a huge issue. Jewish store owners are being looted and their stores being attacked. It is becoming a global... What we've managed to do by screwing this up so bad is we've managed to create a global Muslim blowback rather than a Palestinian blowback.
Sure. Yeah, and the way that they organize on the ground is as a community organization, and a lot of this Barack Obama has talked about, and we've recommended on this program that libertarians should take a look at as well. What they do on the front end to justify, so they have ends that not everybody would agree with, that I wouldn't agree with, and the way that they, instead of just being extreme all the time, they have the public face where they build the hospitals, build schools, run charity organizations, are very active in organizing the community. So it gives them the ability to spot recruits and spread their message. And it also gives the moderates an out. You know, yeah, we know that some in the organization believe that, but these guys over here, they built the school, they did that, you know. So
they help us.
Right, exactly right. And gee, don't we sort of make that argument for government in this country?
We do. The issue, though, and no other news outlet has reported this besides Ben Swan, so I don't know exactly how valid it is. But Ben Swan is reporting that Hamas is actually finding out where the most likely areas are that Israel is going to strike back. They will send out their operatives knocking on doors, door to door, to find out who's home, and then won't let them leave when an attack's coming.
You're
so
kidding.
They can generate support.
Jeez.
And it's working, because I have never seen less support for Israel and Israel's original claim to the Holy Land and a right to exist than right now.
If you go on to Netflix, there are a lot of great documentaries about, you know, what's going on in that region and sort of the history of the region. And a lot of them are by liberal filmmakers who are usually more sympathetic to the Palestinian plight. So what's happening, the Fatwa party, is that?
Fatah.
Right. By Mahmoud Abbas, which...
Who John Kerry threatened to kill their leader, apparently, and they wanted him tried for a war crime.
Really?
In a discussion.
When?
Who would have thought... I didn't read the exact date, but they want him tried in The Hague because he threatened to kill the guy in a discussion.
Oh, my gosh.
I've never thought John Kerry had it in him.
I don't either.
Bush, yes. Cheney, for sure.
Maybe he just, like, offhandedly said, I could kill this guy. And then they were like, what? But... Because I just don't see... Yeah. I mean, Joe Biden, yeah, I could see that.
Well... But it wouldn't have been, you know, on purpose.
You're killing me.
Yeah, it'd have been like that. Right. It'd have been, you're absolutely killing me, Mahmoud.
Right. All of a sudden, he became Bill Clinton. I don't know how.
I know. Sorry about that.
But so one of the things that the Israelis are doing is they're not only are they building this wall, and so they build this wall and they just build the wall, and sometimes they strategically, the Israelis build the wall through historical areas. I watched this documentary about them building the wall through this historic olive grove that existed before the time of Jesus, and the whole area of Palestinians were dependent on this olive grove for income, and the Israelis came through and leveled it and built a wall through it, and this entire town just became destitute overnight.
Oh, they treat Palestinians, there's no doubt about it, and they won't claim anything otherwise. They treat them as second-class citizens.
Sure.
Because of their original right to the land, which, if going back to the very beginnings of that land, they slaughtered the Canaanites because it was God's will.
Right, but you know that was a long time ago now.
But I mean, that's what they use as their right.
I understand,
and it's tough. But that is the nature of this.
So this whole town, not only did they not have their income intact anymore, they also couldn't get across to the other side to see family members because they couldn't enter Israel anymore. And you're watching all these teenage boys see their entire family weep. They become hungry. They become destitute. And you're just sitting there going, you know, I get it now. I get why you have extremism, because it takes two to tango, and too often one side takes the, you know, one side, I'm just pro-Israel. That's it. I'm pro-Israel. They do nothing wrong. They have a right to exist. And the other side, you know, the Israelis are the worst, you know, whatever.
They have a right to be there. They don't have a right to kick everybody else out.
Sure. And so what part of that strategy is to starve out these areas.
So Hamas will lose.
So Hamas will lose because they want them to blame, you know, listen, Hamas is too hard line. We're not going to negotiate. They're the reason that you're suffering. So if you want to negotiate with us, you need to elect the Fatah party.
Exactly. That's the nature of this entire thing. The only thing I don't like is that if you even talk about certain facts, like four boys playing on a beach outside of a resort getting hit by an Israeli rocket, you're anti-Semitic.
Right.
Joe, what are your thoughts on this? Have you been following this much?
No, I haven't been following at all. I was telling Chris before the show, when we brought up that this was going to be the topic, I thought to myself, I am not going to have a ton to contribute. Me, along with a lot of the listeners, probably prior.
We should put that on his tombstone. I just do not have a lot to contribute.
Wow. I do not have a lot to contribute.
I'm sorry, Joe. Was that too mean?
That's hardcore.
I'm sorry.
I said I was unoffendable, but I am offended.
You know, he actually went to Michigan.
Prior to the show, I thought Hamas was something you put on a bagel. So, you know,
have a shmear of Hamas.
Where I stand.
Oh.
I love pita chips with my Hamas.
That is the official libertarian stance right. on Israel. We love and support pita chips with our Hamas. As long as it is smeared.
Oh, I like that we're laughing. We can laugh at death, can't we, folks? Let's have a laugh.
So a few hours ago, Greg, since you know about all this, a few hours ago, the AP put through a report that that they were basically stopping all flights from the U.S. to Israel. Yes. What's the danger for people who are going over there right now?
A rocket hit near the Tel Aviv airport about 8 hours ago. A Hamas rocket hit near the airport. So it hit close enough that pretty much every major U.S. airline has decided to stop flying into Israel because the potential for being hit is too high.
What about flying out?
Flying out, they're not doing – they'll fly out as long as it's during – there are periods of when it's more likely to get hit, right? So, like, they need certain hours of the day. They want to hit when it's most concentrated, so they're going to wait till people are at home.
Okay.
So the major airlines will be continuing flights out because they're going to try to get out as many people as possible. In fact, a lot of the Israeli people have even been considering fleeing into other countries as of right now. And never more than right now has there been more of an interest among the Israeli people in dual citizenship with other countries.
Really?
Right now they are looking for they see the inevitable. That's, in my opinion, right now the Arab world's kind of a mess. Luckily, Egypt is being ruled by an autocratic military leader that has no particular agenda whatsoever other than carrying out the basic functions of government, like water, keeping lines of trade open. They don't have a political position. The only thing they are actually actively pursuing is rooting out the Muslim Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
Why that's important is in Gaza and in Palestine, the Muslim Brotherhood is Hamas. So because historically, Palestine's been able to rely on the support of Egypt for funding, for sending operatives, training, anything they need. But all of a sudden, because we supported a military coup in Egypt over a democratically elected Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas is feeling a bit isolated. Lebanon is another – the Golan Heights is another disputed area between Israel and Lebanon. Lebanon is shooting the occasional antiquated rocket towards Israel – in sparsely populated areas that aren't causing any casualties because they want to show support, but they're so tired of being essentially getting their asses kicked, they're not going to get into this fight. I mean, mm-hmm. Israel is so heavily armed and so vastly militarily superior to everyone in that region that they're not even going to engage them. Gaza, the Gaza Strip, and the state of Palestine wanting recognition, these are people fighting for legitimacy. They are the American revolutionaries. The only difference is they're very theocratic, but they deserve, in my opinion, they deserve the right to exist. They don't deserve the right, though, to antagonize the Israelis that moved there, or you know, the Jewish people that moved there after World War II, mm-hmm. when the state was set up. It's funny, The Onion put out that piece about the solution. Did you see that? I've actually put it on our website. The Onion wrote a farcical piece that the solution is a $1.377 million person estate solution. Essentially, each resident in the Middle East getting their own state.
It was like 370 million.
Yeah,
370 million individual states.
Yeah, individual states, which is actually hilarious, and it caught fire nationally and in the Middle East because people started for the first time to realize, oh my God, individuals wouldn't have these issues. Their leaders have these issues. But in Palestine, one of the biggest lies that's being told is that this is only a religious war.
Well, think how often we see the Palestinian grandmother knitting with the Israeli grandmother, or the Palestinian child holding hands with the Israeli child, because they want to show that not everybody hates each other. But that... And I'm not saying that I'm saying that that's probably the way that most in the region feel. It's just the elected leaders benefit from creating a sense of urgency as far as war goes, especially. See that in our own country.
Mm-hmm.
Look how high poll numbers are when we start beating the war drums.
Except
we've got a rally around the flag. Except for now. Yeah.
It's amazing. I have never seen it where... I would, if you'd asked me, will the American people support the Israeli taking almost preemptive action by being so trying to deter any attack on them. The American people are not in support of Israel right now, which has got to be spooky for them.
Sure.
Which is why the media has been putting such a push, in my opinion, in the New York Times. The National Review has almost gone to the point of propaganda.
I think that at this point, the American public is so tired of any war. their war, meaning pick your there, or our war, and we're just done with it. I mean, it has been constant drum beating since 2000. It's been almost 15 years of constant war. And no, it has been. Yeah, 2001.
No doubt about it.
I can't take it anymore. I'm fatigued with it, you know. And you get to a certain point where, and I think, I don't know if it's because I'm a libertarian or if I'm just reacting to it emotionally. The emotional pleas to support your country and the use of, I'm sure this is going to offend someone, and I'm sorry, but this is the way that I feel. The use of the veteran and the returning soldier and the wounded soldier or the soldier that was killed in action as an emotional tool has grown weary on me.
Yep.
You know, I'm not saying that, oops, sorry, Joe just disappeared. I'm not saying that I don't support our troops. I'm not saying that I don't respect everything that they do and that they go through. I wish they had to go through far, far less, trust me. But when they are used as tools to promote a certain ideology or a certain action by our government, it just doesn't have the same effect that it had 15 years ago because it's been that tactic has been used so much.
Things like Snowden can't happen and then make appeals to national pride.
Sure.
That has been so devastating. I mean, our parents, really, the baby boomers, were anti-institution after Vietnam. It has only accelerated with each successive generation. And now we're at the point where we look at government, and our generation is so fiscally conservative and so socially liberal. They may not know it, but they're on the pathway to libertarian, and those national appeals no longer, in a world that's connected by the internet, that doesn't work.
15 years ago, I was ready to join the military. I didn't. And previously, before Maya got a hold of me, I felt like that would be one of the great regrets of my life, not going into the military. But, you know, I wanted to fight for freedom. I wanted to support our country. And now at this point, when the NSA is switching around nude photos of, let's be honest, guys, 70% of the nude photos they're switching around are of me.
I can't help but feel partly responsible for that.
Well, you know.
I never should have made that website.
80% are to you.
LibertyNudes.com.
Right. LibertyNudes.com, and it's just myself, Gary Johnson, and a couple of Ron
and the
Paul.
And Ronimal.
A Ron Paul ass shot. Number one hit. But, you know, the idea that you're going to die for freedom has, in my mind, become you're going to die for the United States government, which is something that you no longer support. And is that worth defending anymore? And, you know, I think so much of our culture, our generation, looks at it and says, heck yes, I want to support soldiers. If they're willing to put their life on the line, I want to support them when they get back, when they're over there. But I'm not going to buy into the statism that surrounds this and support an ideology of more government that means more killing. And I'm sure that most of the people who live in that region probably feel the exact same way. And we make a tragic mistake when we confuse our nation for our government. You know, a country for its government. The people of Iran are not, you know, Ahmadinejad and
Ayatollah Khomeini. Yeah.
I mean, those are people who, just like in our country, are using policy to create circumstances to help them get reelected.
Exactly.
You know,
it's all about maintaining power. And that actually brings it back to Hamas. Hamas
and
was
trying to steal it from someone else.
And Hamas was only supposed to exist so that they could, their purpose is to wipe Israel off the map and drive them into the sea, but now they've gotten a taste of power. And so that's why I actually feel that Israel needs Hamas to an extent, and then in addition, Hamas needs Israel. Because if Israel were to defeat Hamas and the Fatah party were to take over, you are going to run into serious issues, because now all these guys that are leaders don't have a purpose. They have no enemy to fight against. And Israel is never going to oust Hamas, because yes, they'd love the Fatah party, but they're never going to want ISIS to take over there, or they are in serious trouble.
Right. I just took a picture of Joe sleeping.
I wasn't sleeping. I had my eyes closed.
That's the most anti-Semitic sleep I've ever seen.
The picture of you guys went away because my internet connection died out briefly, and so there's no picture. I just figured I'd close my eyes for a moment.
People are dying overseas, and Joe is taking a nap through it. This is unbelievable.
There they are.
Hashtag not my prob, bro.
Oh man. Have you guys seen this video online? It's an animated video.
Now he's going to start talking to us about his meme videos.
No. Jordan Page posted it. It was like an animated summary of the Israeli-Palestinian conflicts over the years.
Yes, I've seen it.
Okay, so he posted that. You can look it up on YouTube. I thought, it's animated. It's going to be really funny. And in fact, it was one of the most depressing videos I've ever watched.
Yep.
Tweet it out. Go check out our Twitter at We Are Libertarians. The letter R, not the word R. We Are Libertarians. Joe, tweet that out for the people so they can be depressed. Put a not safe for life tag on it if you don't mind.
Okay.
As I go to the Facebook page and post the picture of Joe sleeping, and I'm going to caption it, "How exciting is the new episode of We Are Libertarians?" This exciting.
Oh my
when
God.
The co-host is asleep, you know it is spectacular.
The man who is busting my balls every other day about getting back to work is asleep during it. Unreal.
Well, ultimately, or I'll take a little break for a second while you post it.
No, go ahead. You talk. Let's entertain the people. That's what we're here for.
Ultimately, there's lots of talks about two-state solution, granting Palestine, you know, statehood, which I do think is the right thing, but I don't think it's going to make any difference. If you look at India and Pakistan and their fight over Kashmir, it's not like all of a sudden granting Palestine statehood is going to stop the warring over the Holy Land. This is an issue that will come up perpetually. You hope it never turns nuclear. And two states are just going to war and war and war. What we need is something similar to with Muhammad when he authored the Constitution of Medina. He understood that the Jewish people, when they moved to the Holy Land, were their religious brothers. And so they peacefully coexisted. Under the Constitution of Medina, they had a basic set of rules that everyone had to sign on to, and they agreed and adhered to those for however long a period of time. I don't remember off the top of my head, but that's something we need to address and create. And the only way you're able to do that is by acknowledging another group, giving them the same rights through a constitutional republic type of environment or confederation, and letting them agree to the lowest common denominator, that I'm not going to kill you, you don't kill me, we're going to grant free passage between the two, but we are not going to stand for internal attacks from Palestine and Hamas and any type of Islamic extremist that feels their only role in life is to end Israel's existence, and we're not going to accept that from the Israeli people either.
Right. Well, we solved another world crisis.
So the Onion didn't even mean to, but they solved it.
Well, but the Onion story is the basis of everything that we talk about on this podcast. It is 4. How many people on this planet? 7 billion.
No, now we're like 6. Or almost 7 billion people.
7 billion individual states in this country. 330 individual states. Because I'm sorry, Barack Obama sure as heck doesn't speak for me, and neither did George Bush. And when it comes to foreign policy, if I really want a war in Israel and Palestine, and I believe that Israel should win that war, then hey, pack your stuff up, head over to Israel, start fighting.
Yep.
You know, don't use Joe's tax dollars for it, because he doesn't believe in that.
Exactly.
You know, so if you're passionate about war and you love to kill people, break things, which is the nature of war, head on over, get involved, get in the fight, get in the mix.
And
don't send somebody else's son or spend somebody else's money.
And I think, too, that's part of it. In Israel, they make you serve militarily.
Right. 2 years.
You are forced to participate within the Israeli military, and you're always on reserve. And by putting you in that culture and in that environment, and it is almost brainwashing you into a constant state of fear and aggressiveness, they have created a people that are so ready. The slightest thing triggers them, and they are ready for them to defend themselves. Now, does a proportional response have any role in that? I don't know. It's tough with Israel being surrounded by everybody that hates them. But I do know that they oftentimes get hit and then have huge retaliation.
Right.
And that just creates a group of people of martyrs almost, whose parents were killed, whose friends were killed, and it creates such a powerful sentiment, it almost is self-fulfilling.
Right.
Should we move on to Iraq? Joe, do you have anything that you'd like to say in Israel?
I just want to see someone make an internet video go viral that is a spinoff of the classic 90s Brandy Monica, The Boy Is Mine, but with Israel and Palestine instead.
I smell viral. I don't know about you,
that
Greg,
would be pretty hilarious.
To me, I hear that, and I hear 1990s knockoff of Brandy and Genuine. I smell viral hit.
Yes.
Just saying. Absolutely.
I can't believe you didn't mention the biblical. I mean, you are the biblical scholar of We Are Libertarians.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the dynamics under Middle Eastern culture, I mean, in that era and even today mostly, and in Jewish law, the firstborn son is the rightful heir. And so the basis of the story is that
God's promised Abraham.
Right, Abraham, but the two sons were
Isaac and Ishmael. Ishmael was Hagar.
Right, that's what I thought. So two angels come to Abraham, and they say to Abraham, hey, you're 90, and your wife's 90, and you're going to have a baby. And they just laugh, and they say, well, we're 90. How's that possible? Well, you just got to have faith. And so he wants an heir, and he doesn't have an heir at 90, and so he gets Hagar, his house servant, and he knocks her up, to put it in biblical terms. And
This was before Hagar went to Van Halen, by the
right.
way.
Right.
Correct.
And Ishmael.
Same Hagar.
Yeah. He looks great for 6,072. I think, what is it? Is it 6,000 years?
I don't know. You're 5,000? One of those young earth creationists, aren't you?
No, I'm not. Hagar gives birth to a vodka company and Ishmael. So he says, great, we got an heir. Well, now Sarah, his wife, gets all mad because, I mean, he cheated with his house servant and his wife got all mad. How crazy is that? And so the angels come back and said, hey, you didn't have faith. And then he somehow knocks up Sarah, and Isaac is born. And Isaac is the one who is promised as many descendants as there are in the moon and the stars. And so the Ishmaelites go out to the desert, and they claim the birthright. The descendants of Isaac feel that they are the chosen people, and that's so by now, after 6,000-7,000 years, we still haven't figured it out because we're fighting the same stupid argument. So that is roughly the very rough biblical translation of what happened.
Cheating with a house servant sounds an awful lot like Schwarzenegger's right. time as governor.
Right. And did you see the hair? Oh, it's terrible.
It's a shame, though, because I actually have felt a little bit for President Obama, because nobody would like – every president has always wanted to be able to broker Middle Eastern peace, each one. And everyone goes in hoping to have a honest discussion with individuals they think are rational. And you have the Jewish people coming in, and they point to God's promise to Abraham. And then you have the leaders of Palestine, who, when it was Arafat, it was a little bit different. And that's why we were able to have a bit of peace, because he was a more of a nationalistic Palestinian. But when you have Hamas, they come and talk of the old, or the beginnings of the Quran and Ishmael and the promise to the firstborn, with even within Jewish law. And it's amazing that anyone is even able to pull off anything when that's what you have to reckon with and broker an agreement out of, because I don't see how you would even begin to.
So it's kind of Cain and Abel fighting over father's favor.
Well, the Canaanites were who the Jews slaughtered in order to take Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Let's wrap up. We've spent a good deal of time, as the media has, talking about Isaac and Ishmael and Palestine and Israel. And guess what? Brandy and Monica, Arnold Schwarzenegger and his mistress. We'll probably be talking about Israel and Palestine, 10 years from now.
So, the real worry is that ISIS gets involved there.
Right. So let's focus on the actual scary people. You know, so many times we're on this podcast and we talk about foreign affairs and we talk about what could happen here, what could happen there, what, you know, sort of thinking of possible alternatives. ISIS, to me, is something that, heck, we've talked about on this program for a long time. You've talked about the caliphate. And a couple years ago when you started on the podcast, we talked about interventionism and non-interventionism. You said, listen, they want a caliphate. That is the point. Glenn Beck said that, too. And he was roundly dismissed as a crackpot for saying that on his Fox News show several years ago. And everything that he said is actually true. And it's because he listened to them. And here's the thing. And I've said this, and I've gotten some angry letters about saying this, so I'm going to repeat it. But Osama bin Laden was a lot of things. But I don't think Osama bin Laden was a liar. And so when we went into Saudi Arabia, and he said to the king of Saudi Arabia, let the Mujahideen take care of Saddam Hussein, don't let the Americans in, they will never leave, and they didn't. And they were still there. And then he said, if you don't leave Saudi Arabia, we're going to fight you and attack you and do everything we can to bring you down as a country. And he did. He kept to his word. And so people like Glenn Beck and people like Greg actually go out and seek first-hand sources from these people, their Twitter accounts. You can go on. Greg has posted ISIS accounts.
Yeah.
Read what they're saying. You can read their
purposes. I talked
to
a guy. I had a conversation with a guy from ISIS and put it in a blog post about ISIS.
At wearelibertarians.com.
And the point was, you know, you just have to find out, because you don't get good news coverage. The mistake is to assume George Bush is a lot of things. Like, he's supposedly a conservative. George Bush was over-idealistic about what could be accomplished in Iraq. He thought that every society yearns for freedom. Everyone wants democracy, freedom, you know, all these Western ideals. That is, in fact, not the case in the Arab world. They do not want that, because that the Quran are their governing documents. The Quran is their constitution if it was in America. So the Quran gives them explicit directions on how to set up a government, how to follow that government, what the rule of law is to be. And it even gives them references for how to handle individuals who do not believe the same thing. Now, the ISIS has an issue because they choose to interpret things slightly differently with this. They decided that they were going to tell every Christian underneath land they control right now, which is mainly northern Iraq, part of Syria, and part of Jordan, that if you are Christian, you can convert to Islam, you can be killed, or you can flee. That would, in fact, be out of line with what the Quran says. The Quran says you can live within it and worship however you choose, but you have to pay a tax to the state. And in order to, and this al-Baghdadi, he laid out what the Diwali is supposed to be, how you're supposed to pay it, how much it is a year, and it's progressive. It's based on how much income you make. And so roughly, if you're among the most wealthy residents within the Islamic State, it's roughly $700 a year, which would be a ton in Iraq, given their economy's in shambles, and then there's almost no way to make money, because ISIS is funding itself by literally destroying what they consider false prophets, which are monuments, memorials, part of human civilization. I mean, they're trying to auction off right now the prophet Jonah, who survived the whale, living through the whale in Nineveh, Iraq. They're trying to sell that off on the black market.
Sell what specifically?
Jonah's body. They have the prophet Jonah is buried in Nineveh, Iraq.
Okay.
And so his tomb's there, and they go around. They take these museums, which are not, and they don't praise Allah, so they consider them false prophets, and they sell them to black market antiquities dealers. So that is how they fund themselves. And the real disagreement between ISIS and Al-Qaeda never wanted to form a state necessarily until it was time. ISIS is going around, we're going to be a state, we're going to be a state now, and we're going to fund ourselves by destroying anything that's left over that we consider to be a false prophet. And they're waging a Sunni Shia war.
Right.
This is a battle between Muslims because, and if you follow any of the ISIS accounts, this thing's going to end in Karbala where the Shia, Muhammad's, I believe it was his cousin, and who Shia Muslims consider the rightful caliphate, and the Sunnis consider him the fourth caliphate, he was martyred. And that's where the slaughter is going to happen of the Shia people, since the Shia are the majority right now in Iraq, but that's looking like more and more the Sunnis are flooding in now that there's an Islamic state. There's going to be one hell of a battle where this thing started, and that's where this thing, I think, is going to end until they turn towards Israel.
Yeah, and I think that part of the aggressive stance by Israel is that they're signaling to the rest of the world that they are prepared to go toe-to-toe and shed as much blood as possible to protect themselves. They're telegraphing that because eventually, I don't think that you disagree with this, Greg, and maybe Joe. These dominoes are going to continue to fall in the Middle East. And there's nothing that anybody in the rest of the world can do to stop it. You know, in my opinion, if the United States, Great Britain, all the G8 countries, okay, let's say the BRIC countries and the G8 countries got together, you know, and said, we're going to stop the dominoes from falling, we're going to prop up the puppet regimes that we've had in place for decades in these Middle Eastern countries, the King of Saudi Arabia,
Jordan,
you know, even Jordan, Lebanon,
even Egypt right now,
Egypt, even Syria, and what's his face with Assad. The little mustache, Assad. We'll keep him in power,
even though we'll fund his rebels. So in the public, we can stay out of the Muslim ire, but privately, I always thought we supported Assad because you don't want ISIS to take Syria,
right? So I don't think that if the United States, Great Britain, China, India, all these countries got together, they could stop the toppling of those dominoes.
The one country I
agree with that.
There's one country they're always silent in foreign policy for so long, and now they're our fellow world power. Is
Switzerland.
China.
I thought of Switzerland.
The Chinese consider all this voodoo bullshit. Sorry for the word, but they do. They think this is ridiculous. Like, who cares what somebody wrote about 2,000 years ago?
Right.
Get over yourselves and sell us oil.
Right.
They are the most pragmatic people that have ever existed. Like, and even in the United States, we tend to be idealistic. They drive over dissenters with tanks that are Chinese in Tiananmen Square.
Right.
They don't care about this.
Right.
So if all of a sudden this starts affecting China, that's the one country. And they have been dormant, or they have been not isolationist, but they have been non-interventionist for a very long time and very pragmatic. If this becomes a serious issue for their ability to fuel their growth and becomes harmful to their people, they don't care about human rights at all. They don't care about whatever you want to worship, whatever. It's all hogwash to them, and they'll roll over their own people with tanks. Can you imagine what they'll do to people they don't care about?
Well, yeah, I mean they are also on the edge themselves. They're in this awkward position. They're in their industrial revolution. They're 100 years behind the United States and Europe as far as the industrial revolution goes, and they're walking a fine balance. Those who are in power in China, and they could easily be overrun, and you could have mass chaos in the world's largest country.
Economics is the only thing keeping them in power.
Sure, and they don't want to upset the balance. And if you start having an erosion in the economic, if you have economic decline in that country, you can see the people in the outer bands of China start to overthrow the government.
It'll be a populist uprising.
Yeah, and it was a populist uprising. I saw a great article. I forget where it was, but I know I found it linked on Long Form or Long Reads, one of those sites, about the Chinese farmers who led the way in introducing a capitalist ideal to the communist system. And it was the farmers of China, just your average Joe Chinese farmer who really made the push to get them to the point where they are more capitalistic. It was a really interesting article.
And
that could happen again with, you know.
Oh, it will.
Self-governance.
It will. These people understand that they have money now. Like, the United States, the high-end real estate market is being flooded with Chinese dollars mm-hmm. because they don't want their money subject to confiscation.
Right.
So they're putting it outside. Now, China hates that, and so they're having to reform their policies because they're seeing capital flee the country.
Right.
And so money always dictates all things, and if oil becomes scarce and prices spike, the Chinese leaders, the Communist Party, who that's really a terrible name, really what they are like essential economic pragmatists
right.
that will not talk about, you know, socialism or what, democratic welfare. They will roll over you in tanks, black bag you, and no one will bat an eye, and there'll be no, like in the case of Osama bin Laden with the United States, there'll be no burial at sea. It'll be, you're in the streets, you're gone, now where do we purchase this from so the price comes down?
Yeah, so they'll just, and they won't roll in with Chinese tanks, and they'll just start, they'll pick a party, and they'll start funding them like Russia and the United States do.
Exactly.
You know, they'll prop up dictators to stabilize
they'll
the
have
region.
Their own people do it.
Right. So, yeah, I think that ISIS and Iraq, it's not Iraq, because that's a nationalistic border. We're talking about an ideological party as opposed to a nationalistic party, and a religious party as opposed to a nationalistic party. Instead of these, you know, and this goes into the immigration debate, if we have time to get to it at this point. Hopefully, we're an hour into this. You know, lines on a map, what do they really mean at the end of the day? And this is libertarianism. Most libertarians generally, by the time they're further down the rabbit hole, do not care about immigration or borders or, we are open borders because we're all human beings and you get treated a certain way and, you know, we all govern ourselves. What do we need a government for when we're governing ourselves? What do you need a nationalistic border? The cause of nationalism, the false idea of a government and a state has led more people to their death in the last 100 years than religion has. You know, people want to sit there and say, oh, think of how many people have died at the hands of religion, Christians and Buddhists and Muslims and Jews, all because of religion. Well, no. The religion that has killed more people in the last 120 years is the religion of the state, of government, than any
Amen.
Other thing. Thank you, Joe. And so, you know, all that those false lines on the map, what they really mean, because look at the bottom, look at me. Look at the south border of Texas and the north border of Mexico. Does that land look any different when you cross from Illinois into Ohio?
That'd be tough, actually.
Yeah, actually, that'd be tough. Sorry.
Illinois to Ohio would be quite the jump.
Well, listen, it's the 57th state connecting to the 56th. Indiana into Ohio. I forgot where I lived for a moment.
Canada.
You son of that. I mean, I'll tell you what. This Canada joke is getting old. It was my joke. I had the joke. It was funny when I was in charge of it. Now it's out of hand. Out of hand.
There's a line in The Dark Knight where, you know, the hero, if he lives long enough, becomes the villain. And you are the embodiment of that, in fact.
I know. So people are accusing me of being Canadian now. Not funny.
Let's be honest, though. Would you be mad if we threw a few rockets at Canada?
No.
See, I don't know. That was my one
but
issue.
But people
like,
would
well.
Be outraged because white people would be throwing rockets at white people, and we cannot have that. Okay? It's like in Indianapolis, we have had like a murder every day in Indianapolis, and it's been fine because it was not white people getting shot every day in Indianapolis. And then seven people get shot in Broad Ripple.
Whoa! Edit that one out for sure.
Hold your horses there, buddy.
Edit Brown Ripple out for sure.
That was a Freudian slip. So, and then all of a sudden, seven white people get shot in
Wow!
So all of a sudden, seven white people get shot in Broad Ripple, and now we have to have vigils about all the violence in our city. I mean, listen. All right, maybe I've gone too far.
No, but I understand what you mean, is that it is very compartmentalized.
Right.
How close it is to you. And
hey, murders take place with those people. In the Middle East, with these wars, that's what those people do. You'd never see the civilized people of Canada and America bombing each other. And never mind the fact that your country is sending rockets to the Middle East. We're the ones sending rockets to the Israelis. We're the ones sending rockets to the Syrians.
To ISIS.
To ISIS, to Osama bin Laden, to Saddam Hussein.
It's interventionism has created
you just
every
don't
one
see
of our
it.
Wars.
Yeah, you just don't see it. And so, you know, we would never fire rockets at Canada, but we fire rockets at almost every other country in the entire planet, including at ourselves, because most of the weapons that we send over there get fired back at us.
The leader of Brilliant ISIS, al-Baghdadi, drives around in an American-made Hummer.
Right. Yeah.
It's just, you can't even imagine how frustrating that is for
there
the
was
government.
An enormous heist, I guess is the way to put it. I mean, they went in and we just left all our equipment the Iraq war in Iraq. And Iraqi security forces had a ton of Humvees and like armored vehicles and weapons. And ISIS just rolled in and said, "Hey, give us the keys. You're out." And now they have all this equipment. And so, if we were to put boots on the ground, we would literally be fighting our own equipment.
Yep.
So, and based on our last experience rolling into Iraq, they'd probably be better equipped than we would have been.
Again, now we actually trained them and funded them and provided all their
right.
I mean, now that's a lost cause, in my opinion. Iraq is done. There's no saving it. The only thing you can do now is hope that Iran's strong enough to beat back ISIS. But all that'll do is ignite a Sunni Shia war.
So,
it all just sounds so absurd.
I know, right?
I know.
Oh, my gosh.
Is there anything going on in Syria still? Because you never hear about Syria. Like, is there still fighting that goes on?
Horrible fighting. Because
same level?
ISIS has now, I'd say, the Iraqi border, Iraqi-Syrian border, probably about 60 to 70 miles into Syria is now under ISIS control.
Okay.
Because they are slowly going to pick off each state. Now, their next target is Lebanon, which they'll take. That'll be pretty easy. Libya they'll take, if they haven't technically already. Syria would be next because what they believe in Islam, it's a little bit different in Christianity in that world peace, but the end times for Christians is the afterlife, right? Mm-hmm. In Islam, it's on earth. It's earthly. It's one global caliphate in Allah's will. In order for that to happen, Damascus has to be under the caliphate control, which is where it'll be headquartered in Syria. So their emphasis is going to be on Syria and Damascus, but they're going to try to take Lebanon. They're in Jordan already because we trained them there, and they're already in Gaza. And Gaza will be their last because they know that if they attack Israel full force, all of a sudden the allies, and if they take the real issue though with Syria is if they piss off Russia, because Russia backs Assad.
Right.
And so if they make Russia too mad, which is actually what we're going through right now, he's going to be on high alert because right now he's whimpering around with his tail between his legs.
Mm-hmm.
Vladimir Putin is much like the Chinese.
Right.
He doesn't really care what you think. He doesn't care about your, you know, they closed the churches in Russia.
Right. And the difference between the Chinese and Putin and Russia, the Russian people and Putin himself are much more vain and sensitive. And so they are much more... how dare you slight me? I must get revenge.
They go around looking for ways to be offended.
Right.
They're like aggressive liberals, actually.
So, yeah, they're like brutalists.
Yeah, they really are.
Just kidding. Just kidding, everybody. Just a joke. I did not mean to be my own social terrorist. But... Yeah,
his email is Spangle at wearelibertarians.com. Right.
It's funny, Jeffrey Tucker actually wrote a piece this week called Rebels Will Inherit the Earth. Did you read that, Joe?
Nope, but I saw it.
I know, you and Tucker are pretty tight, so I wasn't sure if you had read that or not.
They've made out.
Tucker's a great guy, but he writes so much that I could never even try to read everything he puts out.
He does. And it's funny, he very much follows Hemingway's advice, where you write drunk and edit sober. So I read that piece, and all I could think was... You know, in the United States, that would not spread very well, because what he was essentially saying is that ISIS winning was inevitable, rebels winning is inevitable, and that rebels will inherit the earth. Now, that's all good and fine, but at a certain point, principle matters, regardless of whether you're a rebel or not, because in America, the rebels lost. The Confederacy lost because we weren't willing to tolerate slavery, and then the states' rights issue and federalism being its very nature of its core. And I was wondering if you had got to go back and forth with him at all on that, and whether he maybe regrets writing that piece.
I have not.
Not yet? Okay.
All right. Well, do you want to tweet that out? Do you want to link that? What do you want to do with that?
We can probably tweet it out.
I might tweet that out, just because I feel like it's one thing to talk about being in support of the rebels and why they'll inherit the earth, but I don't know. At a certain point, you got to be a little bit cautious about which rebels you support.
Right.
Which causes you support.
Why do we have to support rebels at all is my question. I mean, you look at Israel-Palestine, you look at – let's take Israel-Palestine. It's never going to get better. There's nothing that we can do to influence the outcome. In fact, our influence for the Israelis have probably hurt as much as it's helped. It's just kept it perpetual. It's not solved anything.
It institutionalized.
Right. We institutionalized the Israeli-Palestine conflict at every turn, from the Harry Truman's creation of the state, which we're not going to say one way or the which is right one way or the other. That's for you to research and do on your own. That's a topic of a different time. But
we should have created almost like a free zone for visitation. You know right. what I mean? For but
why are we creating a statist, Greg? I can hear Roger. I can hear
Wait
Roger.
Josiah hears that one.
I can hear Roger Paxton just crunching his ice. Why is it our decision who gets the land? It's just like ISIS and Iraq. Iraq is a made up country anyways. And what does it matter to us who has? Now, I understand oil and resources.
No, because at that point in time, if we had just created a voluntary, it's like we've taught nature abhors a vacuum. So if we had not done anything and the Jewish people were to move there after World War II, it would have been inevitable. Another war would have begun anyway. The reason we created Israel was to create almost a secure area for them that they claim they had the original right to. It has nothing to do. I don't support statism. I support. It's Israel not wanting Hamas to lose, so ISIS takes control, is the exact same principle.
Right.
You know, it's nature. Well, until men, the rational men stand up and say, I will govern myself, I will take control, you're forced to deal with leaders.
Right.
But you got to identify yourself, or we don't even know who to talk to.
I'm the leader. Joe?
Dear leader.
Get out of here. I'm the leader. Get.
I want to make a meme of Greg that says, I do not support statism. I am statism.
I feel a little bit like Vinny Chase.
Yeah.
all right. Let's touch on immigration real quick because we only got about 15 minutes left here. So immigration reform, we talk about this all the time. And I kind of just want to touch on it because it'll be interesting to hear, go back and listen to the last couple times we talked about it and hear my progression. And see how I might have progressed on the topic. Greg, fill us in on what is happening with the immigration debate, the perennial fundraiser that we have every summer.
What's going on is that in 2012, when part of the way President Obama enforced the law of the existing legislation was that if you were a caretaker of a child that came here and immigrated or that was born here, it's a terrible word, but anchor babies is what they refer to them as. Individuals flooded into the United States to take advantage of that clause. And so last year we had about 90,000 people come and utilize that clause. This year the projection is more like 160,000. So right now one third of the population of El Salvador and Guatemala live in the United States illegally.
Hold on. Look at Joe's face. Joe knows it's coming. Ruiz, our minority outreach correspondent on the program, as soon as Greg started talking about immigration and said, like, Guatemalan and Puerto Rican. And
I didn't say Puerto Rican. That's an American territory.
His face his face just sunk down into his hand, and he's like, here come the gringos with their racist jokes. I could see it on his face. So, anyways, anchor babies come here. Get back.
President Obama authorized interpreted a law in a way that any caretaker, so any mother, grandmother, like, that's why down in Texas – the border and people, you know, flooding here, coming here to take advantage of that clause are mainly women and children. It's not so much that it's like, Drudge plays up that it's the gangs and the drug wars and blah, blah, blah. But President Obama has not been enforcing deportation as much, quite frankly, as the very existence of the Department of Immigration and Naturalization exists to do. He is he's trying to place them federally. He's trying to put them in churches, anywhere he can find a place, and he doesn't necessarily want to deport them because he understands. I think he's of the similar mindset we are. Now, the cynic would say, no, he's trying to create voters in a permanent Democrat majority.
Right.
And regardless of whether that's his intent or not, I do believe that's what will eventually happen. To the winner goes the spoils, so the first to grant amnesty will get votes regardless and create a voting block, in my opinion. But what we're actually seeing is a mutiny within local forces. People that are on the border are actively telling the federal government no, to the point where department chairmen are having to go back to the federal government and be like, listen, I can't do that. And it is an actual mutiny. And it's creating a bit of a crisis, but what's really nasty is that...
When we don't listen to the government, it's a crisis, isn't it?
Yeah. And so Rick Perry, who... I know you thought I was nuts. Remember this about a year ago, and I said, I think he's going to be the nominee.
You said it like 2 months ago when we did the famous podcast.
Still think he's going to be the nominee because there's no one else there.
He's barely there.
You think
Rick Perry's going to be the nominee?
I would bet you anything.
Don't you listen to this show? You were...
Well, it's been so long since the last episode. I probably just forgot.
I'll give you that.
That was good, Joe.
Good way to turn it back on me. I'm proud of you. I've taught you well.
But we were actually sitting at that pub.
I'll teach him borderline personality hosting in just a moment. So, I'll teach you how to be a borderline personality as you host your own. You always turn it right back around and use your own paranoia against you.
Back to the other borderlines.
Yeah. How many borderlines have you crossed? That got uncomfortable. Wow.
Wow.
Hey, back to you, Greg.
Sorry. Man. That got uncomfortable. Gee.
I told you he flirted with the Democrats and it's starting to show.
Oh, I know.
Gosh.
Look at him.
How many miles away are we and I'm feeling the heat?
Right?
Do you carry around an anchor in your pocket?
Oh my gosh.
Greg.
No, white man. I'm an anchor baby.
Anyway.
Let me edit this back to you so you know what to edit out.
Man.
I should take that out. I thought that was great.
I would have never thought I was the insensitive Republican. that I actually have the high ground on this show. And my God, is it more apparent than ever right now.
I can't
now.
Believe I've ceded the moral high ground to Greg Lenz.
I told you Bob and Tom changed you this morning.
I'm not safe
Chris
for life.
Spangle has become Bill O'Reilly.
He pretty much has.
Coming up next, my next book, Killing Everybody.
Killing hip-hop
Patriot.
Music.
All right, go.
No, but Rick Perry has decided that he is sending the National Guard, 10,000 troops, down to the border to handle this situation because he looks at it through the statist mindset. If you do not protect your border, you are not sovereign. You do not have a state. And President Obama could not be more perturbed, but this has elevated Rick Perry to the national stage, and the polling's changed in the United States.
Nothing rallies people to a politician like rallying the troops.
True, but it's funny. Immigration has always been on the Democrat side.
Right, yeah. I mean,
not
this guy is rallying troops. He's literally raising troops to fight for a racist cause. In my opinion, at least.
Yes.
And people love that.
I'm telling you. And
listen.
He taps into the right strain of anger that's going on in America's political strain right now. He is a Baptist, fire-breathing John Hagee minister. And that's why I thought he was so dangerous, is if the electorate stays angry, there's one man who does angry better than anybody, and it's Rick Perry. I swear he did a speech in Iowa just this last week where it was in a closed room. And it was about immigration. And he talked about, are we even a free country if we can't protect our borders? And it got a standing ovation among a group of Iowa college kids. This guy does angry better than anyone.
Right.
And this is his issue. It's elevated him because he was looking like he was going to fade away into history.
Sure.
Because he was the front runner because no one wanted Romney. They wanted, they wanted someone angry. And I think the second time around, if enough moderates will forgive him and immigration is that issue to win the white working Democrat on, he's dangerous, especially in Iowa. Not New Hampshire, but the South. It could be a clean sweep.
There goes the EPA.
Who?
Joe really wants to keep the EPA.
Oh,
yeah. So there goes the EPA.
Yeah,
they're trying to crack down on all that cow fart inhaling.
Apparently, all you got to do is get rid of your cowboy boots and get some hipster glasses, and everybody thinks you're highly intelligent, which, quite frankly, explains Rachel Maddow perfectly.
Hey, I think she's intelligent. Never mind. What'd you just say? It sent me the text on that time. Oh, no. Oh, man. Yeah, I need to edit that out.
What's the time right now?
We're editing it out, I said, she's a woman. How could she be smart?
121.
You guys didn't get the EPA? That was the Ron Paul crack on the
stage. Oh, it was hilarious.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Chris looked like he didn't know what I was talking about.
I was totally confused.
He hasn't paid attention to politics in quite some time. He's easing his way back into it.
It's been 6 months. I'm tender down there, okay? Fuck me gently, Joe. All right. Okay.
But as far as the libertarian position goes and the solution, is it just amnesty? Citizenship? Grant it right away?
See, no, not necessarily, because as long as you have a welfare state that we are paying money for, that we are spending our taxes on, you can't just have open borders. You can't just have a state of amnesty. Unless you take the Maya solution, which is just like turning the light switch off on the federal government or in the state government and the local government and the township government and everything else, which is not realistic.
I love Never Neverland too, but it doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Right.
Now, why is that?
Why what? Why would Maya turn the lights out?
No. Why can't you? Why would you have to fully do away with the welfare state in order to have open borders?
Because it isn't just the. I think sometimes when we talk about welfare, we think somebody is just sitting there and collecting a paycheck, but that's not it. It is the use of services, and then you go back and pay for those services like healthcare. So, if you come to the country and you know that there's free healthcare, there's food stamps, there's all these different services that will help you get started, it overwhelms the system. And I don't think that people would immigrate to our country, and I don't just think that it is a Hispanic thing, although I think that the debate largely has been painted as Americans versus Hispanics coming into this country. Immigration is tough for any nationality trying to come into the United States. It's tougher on Hispanic country people of Hispanic origins, countries of origins. So there was a study one time that like it's like 1,000 times easier and 10 years quicker to immigrate to the United States if you're British than if you're Mexican, for instance.
And what you really mean is like assimilate.
Assimilate, yeah.
Yeah.
So if we have open borders and we don't have customs, if we don't have the ability to kind of regulate how many people we're letting in, people come here, they say, okay, I know that I can go to America and my basics are going to be covered. If I get hurt, I'll have food, I'll have housing, I'll have healthcare. That can help me get my start and then I can work my way into the American dream. But you and I both know that you get trapped in that cycle, it becomes tough to get out of that cycle. And secondly, you have so many people coming to use the services on the front end, and even if you have the pipe dream of 90% of those people working their way out of those basic services and they become self-reliant, so many people would come in and use the services because they were free, that it overwhelmed the system. Now, that is my opinion, and I'm sure that it will be different a year from now. But
isn't there a middle, like a plan C, though? Isn't removing those services from non-taxpaying citizens?
They're ineligible for 5 years as of right now.
I got a lot of heat in 2004 when I really took a look at what Bush was proposing and thought, that makes sense. You want to come here, you want to work, you want to pay taxes. We're going to help make you legal if you work here already, and so we can get your tax money. You know, I know it sounds ludicrous for a libertarian to advocate taking more taxes from somebody, but
we already are.
why should I pay more taxes, or why should I be penalized? Because I believe their labor should be taxed just as much as mine if I'm going to be taxed.
And here's the real argument. They already are. Right now, and that was in like some of the show prep, is right now to the tune of roughly over, since 2007, it's somewhere around $27, $28 billion that we take in from undocumented workers off of Social Security taxes that the employer already collects. And so when I look at it and I say, if someone's here, they're undocumented, they're already paying taxes, the very foundations of this country were based upon no taxation without representation. So if you're here and you're working and you're paying to support our state, I feel like that it is hypocritical, one, in our founding, and two, just based on a contractual agreement of employment, that you're not allowed to, one, vote towards what you want your state to do or your country to do, and two, you're being forced to contribute to something where you're not even granted the same rights as those who are also contributing towards it. You're a second-class citizen. Bush had a good plan. You don't necessarily have to grant citizenship immediately. I think a pathway to citizenship might be a little bit tough because all you're going to do is create a bigger bureaucracy, because it took until 2010 to process the Cubans that fled under Reagan in 1986. Uh-huh. We didn't process the last one until 2010. It took a little while.
Of course.
Just in time to file for Social Security for that individual.
Right.
But what I do think would be permanent employment status, where they get a tax identification number. They don't. Voting will be probably up to congressional fight. But they have the ability to work here. They will not be targeted like by Sheriff Joe and his posse out in Arizona. And they have access to, they can get health care maybe for 5 years, which is what some of the plans have flirted. They don't have access to Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, that type of thing. But after 5 years, where it looks like they've been a temporary worker, that's when they are granted, and that's when they'd be eligible for such things.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple instances just recently from friends of mine. One is a family relative who has been here for 30 years, is now being deported back to her home country for no discernible reason. Here's a person who's been in this country longer, has lived longer in the United States than their home country, has settled down, made roots, paid taxes, has been a productive member of our society here locally and you know, I guess on the national scale and some as a cog in the wheel, cog in the machine. But they're being deported back for no real reason. And so now all those roots are being ripped away from them, and we're losing somebody who is a productive member and sending them back to a place where they have no real connections. And there's really no explanation. Another person... works in the landscaping industry, and they're doing a job that the boss can't find somebody else who works nearly as hard as this guy. And they're a great employee, and he has a son here, and his wife is here, and he's being deported, and the son and the wife are not going back. He's going back if he can't. So it's
anti-American, in my opinion.
Right. Why are we kicking out productive members of our society? I mean, mm-hmm. really, it's politicians feel like they need to act. They need to do something. Local officials need to do something. So we need to get rid of these people, get them out of our country. When what does it hurt to have more people live here and be productive members of our society?
In my opinion, it's a change in the American psyche. Mm-hmm. In that original, I mean, and this is before America existed, when we were, you know, the people searching for the new world, for a better life, free from religious persecution. It was that adventure for freedom.
Right.
Now the American psyche doesn't look at it as an ever-expanding pie where I have every opportunity to go out and make mine. Now it's that guy working has taken my opportunity for employment. And the nasty one and the political winning one.
What was that?
That was from South Park. Oh. So we're South Park, where if the guys were all the white men in the town, if they stopped humping each other in the ass, then more Mexicans would enter the country. It was something ridiculous like that. Like, the only way to stop illegal immigrants from coming into South Park was gay male sex. And the guy, all the men got whipped in to such a frenzy that they took our jab.
And that's the what it is. Is it went from, we should celebrate people who come here with nothing to forge a better life for themselves.
Right.
That is, and I know you guys don't love nationalism, but like to me, America isn't, it's not about nationalism. It's
right.
We set up, we determined we were fit for self-government. We were going to have a tiny federal government, and we had the right to decide where we wanted to live.
Don't mistake me for someone. I love my country, and I love the people in my country, and I love my community, and you know, I love the fact that a foreigner like Joe can come here and make something of himself, and you, whatever race you are.
Get off my land.
Right.
I'm Cherokee, bro. You are on my land, and get off it.
Hey, I'm 1/16th Cherokee and Choctaw. I can get federal benefits anytime I want.
Kalijah?
Right.
Documented?
So, no, yes. But, you know, it's... I love my country, and I just don't love my government, and I don't feel that my government represents me, and I don't think that I think that if you blindly – just sometimes as we kind of move through the nationalistic holiday season here, you just sort of go, really? What's the – you know, we just – man, I shouldn't talk about that. I'll talk about it off air, but, you know, maybe at a different point when it's – raw, not raw and sensitive, but you know, they're just these little ceremonies that we have in this country that you look at it and you go, that's not celebrating my country, that's not celebrating the people, the culture of what makes this country great, that is celebrating the authority and the power of the government.
Mm-hmm. You know? Exactly.
And that's what I have a problem with. I have a problem with the authority and the power of our government, with the celebrations that uphold that, but it doesn't mean that I don't love my country and love the culture and love the ability to have this podcast and say the things that I said on this podcast and know that I can sleep just fine tonight. And you downloading this podcast, you're not going to go to jail for listening to it.
No, the only people you have to fear are the brutalists.
Right. I mean, the only person that might kick down my door and shove freedom in my mouth is Maya Axton. So,
there's no state here now, Chrissy.
I will make you free. Open up.
But, you know, it's that to me is what – there is nothing more American, the ideal of what – you know, like the Jeffersonian ideal, than that pursuit of a better life, risking it all, working, willing to work hard. And instead, it's turned into something nasty where it's cultural protection.
It's bigotry. And bigotry is not an American value. And I refuse to celebrate bigotry.
Exactly.
And when you really boil down some of these big debates that we have, it is old world attitudes that are bigoted and that do not celebrate the choice of individual. It celebrates the choice of the state to rule your life or for society to rule the lives of minorities. I wouldn't get gay married as a personal choice, but you know what? If you and Joe want to get gay married, Greg, I'll come to the wedding. That's fine with me. That's not my choice. It's not my personal decision.
Mickey might have some opposition.
Legally,
yeah, that's true. Chris, how does it feel to be on a podcast with two ordained ministers?
I feel that's right. You're both ordained ministers.
Do you feel holier than thou?
You could gay marry each other. Do you say I do? I do. Yeah.
Bigotry.
So, bigotry right there. Right there. But the fact is that when you really nail somebody down on gay marriage, they just think it's gross. You know, or they personally have a problem with it. When you start talking about immigration, Joe's holding
What's
up a very
say? I am statism.
when you start talking about immigration, a lot of times it is born out of the ideal of nationalism and bigotry, and those are two American values that I don't celebrate. And so
they're not American; they're anti-American. They're
anti,
values.
Right? Exactly right.
They are, if anything, and this is where
I want more people to come here and be more successful. And if somebody comes here and they're more successful than me, that's great because that's going to rise my tide as well.
Exactly,
rise my boat.
That was the original ideal, and unfortunately, now it is. Well, we should probably declare English the official language. You have to learn American history. You have to talk about the separate. Now, I am conflicted on separation of powers and understanding that type of thing, because if people don't have a grounding in governance, they're not going to understand the profound effects of our founders debating what type of government to form. But, you know, it doesn't have to be American. It just has to be. Quite frankly, there is no American. Gosh, we speak English here.
That's right.
We're a country of immigrants.
We speak English.
Except for me. I'm OG, but you guys are all immigrants.
You are swarthy, Greg. Joe, you're Mexican. What do you feel about immigration?
Oh, my.
How do you feel about the immigration topic?
I'm not Mexican.
What was that? What'd you say, Speedy?
I am not Mexican, senor.
He never fails to disappoint, does he?
I don't understand why you always got to call me that.
Joe's half Puerto Rican, and we bust his balls.
Don't say we.
Me. Yeah. Hey, you help.
I don't.
or at least it has been today.
Yeah.
Joe, unfortunately, at the point where Joe gets to defend himself, he's breaking up. Seriously, Joe, what are your thoughts on immigration? I mean, do you agree with Greg and I? Are you open borders? Are you closed borders? Are you Rick Perry and Sheriff Joe ready to put troops on the border to keep them out?
Nah, man, I'm open borders. And that's why I asked the question about, you know, if you can do away with the services, you know, of the welfare state for people who are not legal U.S. citizens, don't you defeat half of the problem? And, I also think, as much as I dislike taxes, and I don't know if I'm still breaking up or not, but
no, a
consumption tax would actually fix, you know, a lot of the issues that we currently experience in the U.S. in terms of immigration problems. So I think the conversation really needs to be changed to less about, you know, who is or is not crossing that invisible line, but, you know, what we can more pragmatically do, I guess, to just have a more reasonable system. And I think a consumption tax would be a part of that.
Yeah, meaning the fair tax. So a lot of sort of detaching a lot of the taxes or all of the taxes from the employer, that really helps solve a lot of the equation, and everybody pays their fair share. Mm-hmm. That's why it's called the fair tax. And I know a lot of libertarians bristle at the fact that a libertarian would support the fair tax because it's a tax.
Right. You almost can't say the words fair tax because you always have that one libertarian who's going to be like, it can't be fair if it's a tax.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I think that's part of the struggle of being a libertarian in 2014 as opposed to 2114, when it will be a totally libertarian society. I'm sure of it. You know, the struggle of the modern libertarian is balancing what you personally believe is the best solution. And how do you deal with the situation as it presents itself now? So I would like no taxes because I believe that a free society demands no taxes. But at the same time, that's not realistic in the current environment. So if you're elected tomorrow to Congress, what would you propose? You know, and that's the perpetual argument. That's libertarians argue about that all the time. And that's half of what we talk about here.
And I mean, to be clear, we are all voluntarists at our core.
Right. It's just how much government are you willing to settle for in the meantime as you it's direction versus destination. Right? You're heading in a direction versus I want the destination now.
And part of
and we're not going to tell you what the right way is. I think if you listen to this podcast, it's pretty clear that like Maya is the destination libertarian for the Weird Libertarians universe, and the rest of us are kind of directional. You're much more directional than others, and Joe, I don't know. Joe, I don't know what you are anymore,
dude. It just depends on the day.
Yeah, he's definitely an anarchist, aren't you?
Yeah, I think for the most part, but you know, but I can still say something like I'd rather have the fair tax than what we currently have. I think just in terms of keeping the peace, it's you know, it's much less of a power struggle to say, okay, come on over, but you're going to pay for anything that you use, than it is, you know, I'm going to line troops up along the border and make sure that you stay out. That just seems like it could get dangerous and like people's lives could be negatively impacted. I'm not okay with that.
It's funny. I recently had like a breakthrough on this, and for the longest time I had trouble putting into words why I felt the way I felt of being a directional libertarian. And it wasn't until I was brushing up on some Russell Kirk because I've been reading a book about the founding of the National Review currently, and reading about the battle between Frank Meyer and Russell Kirk. And I actually got embroiled in a little bit of a heated discussion with a local Indiana Republican that didn't even know who Russell Kirk was, and he is a leader of the party, and I found that quite hysterical.
Frank Meyer was an early leader in the libertarian thought movement, and then Russell Kirk was really the
guy from Escape to New York, right?
Right, yes. Yeah. Married to Goldie Hawn.
Yes. I loved Overboard.
Overboard was
a great movie.
He not only did he collect all the great conservative thought, thereby creating a consistent conservative ideology, he also had children with Goldie Hawn. What a life, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, man. No, but that's what I found. And that's funny. That's when I decided, too, that the GOP as it exists today is a defunct organization.
Yeah, here's a guy who literally wrote the book on what conservative ideology is through the ages. The conservative mind collected all the great conservative thought, and Russell Kirk edited together what a conservative ideology was in the modern era. And the head of the Young Republicans in Indiana didn't know who
Russell Kirk was.
Right.
And that'd be like a leader at a church telling you who is Jesus Christ.
Right.
You know, it's pretty unbelievable to me. And that's when I was just
more like, who is this? Who's Paul again?
Yes. What is this church you speak of?
I get Jesus. I get, you know, i.e. Ronald Reagan. But who was Paul? I don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of the equivalent. And it just goes to show you that most of Republican politics and heck, a lot of libertarians and Democrats, too, it's just reactionary. It's not born out of a philosophy that you put together or thought about or put time into thinking about. It's reactionary. Well, they're doing this, so I need to think this.
Taking a line and running with it. I told you guys that I talked to a candidate for state rep that ran as a Republican, and he actually told me while we were talking, yeah, I haven't really had time to focus in on any, you know, specific issues and gather my thoughts on, you know, what I thought about them or coming up with any solutions. But, you know, I just figure I'm a conservative. I love, insert the name of his city or the county that he was running under. He's like, and I think that as long as the people know that about me, they'll have enough to go on.
Sure.
And I never knew that Joe met Sarah Palin and or ran against or ran as governor of Alaska.
And so let's think about what that means. He's a conservative, which what does that really mean? It means that he identifies with the tribe of conservatism. He likes the other. He likes the people. He likes the collection of conservatives and likes what they have to say.
All different shades of white.
Sure. Right, but he doesn't have, it's not rooted in philosophy, and most of modern conservatism is not anymore. It's reactionary politics, and, you know, Democrats at least have a consistent ideology, which is grow the state, grow the government bigger, use the government as a force for good, and Republicans just have kind of lost their way because they've made libertarians the enemy, and instead of working with libertarians to let them influence their own policy and letting libertarians be the grown-ups in the room and the smart ones in the room, if I may inflate our own egos, they've kicked us to the curb, and libertarians have stayed there and not wanted to go back and not wanted to sit there and listen to, for the millionth time, why don't you just join the GOP and change it from the inside? It's because you're all morons and you don't listen to any kind of rational thinking. You listen to Rush Limbaugh instead.
And my point of getting Kirk was that Kirk considered society as it exists today is the culmination of the wisdom from the past.
Right.
And that's something that I actually think isn't necessarily harmful to libertarians, as it is, you know, we all openly mock government institutions, right?
Yep.
We do.
They're
dumb.
Just the other day I was saying Department of Defense. Nah, nah.
You know, but we mock the absurdity and stupidity of government. But Kirk's point was that the conservative has to be cognizant of the fact that the reason we have these things is that our ancestors in the collective wisdom of the past, we've learned something and thought that something of this original intent, not the form it takes, but the intent of the organization as it exists, is necessary, and that's the wisdom of the past. And that's why I am a destination libertarian, is I understand that we have organically arrived where we are now. It's been progressive, it's taken time, it's been push-pull, two steps forward, one step back. to overthrow it all of a sudden and just shut the lights off is harmful to liberty.
Right.
To do it gradually, slowly repeal the state, and granted, is that possible? We don't know yet. We haven't been able to do it.
Why not copy the people who slowly educated and brainwashed the society that we live in into thinking that the government was the moral good?
Exactly.
Fulfill what Eugene Debs said 100 years ago, which is, hey, let's run as a third party, influence the major party we closely identify with, and let them move towards socialism. And that's exactly what happened.
Boom. Nailed it. And yep. That is what we
that's
can do.
That's exactly what he said after he got locked up by Woodrow Wilson. Boom. Nailed it.
Boom. Nailed it.
Yep.
Somebody call my attorney.
Making a difference.
But that's all I thought about after reading Kirk, and one, I realizing how intellectually bankrupt the GOP is, at least here in Indiana. But two, I think there is something to learn from why the world exists as it does today. Is there anything we can learn from our past? Is there a reason why our ancestors and those that came before us originally decided to have government, originally decided to have social welfare? Not saying they wanted it to be this nasty SOB it is today, because now it's bastardized and awful. But what was the original intent of that? And
right.
Always be cognizant of that, rather than just saying, let's just shut the whole thing down.
Right. All right.
Nice impression.
We gotta go. So we're going to do our little soapbox. We're going to have Greg go first. You know, on the Facebook page, a little while ago, we referenced it, but Joe fell asleep during the middle of the podcast and was taking a little bit of a nap. So I took a photo of the Skype of him taking a nap. So share that with your friends, especially Joe's friends. And I captioned it this. How exciting is the new episode of We Are Libertarians? A picture says 1,000 words, as does Greg Lins in this episode.
Sorry, I did dominate the mic. I apologize.
No, that's why you're here. People like to hear you talk. Me and Joe, not as much. So,
not true.
Asshole Josiah Crones, the worst listener to this entire podcast, the person that I can't stand, I wish he'd just never listen again.
Because I like him. He's on my side.
No, he is a dick. Josiah Crones is the worst listener we have.
I may just exercise my original claim to Montana and start firing rockets at Idaho.
That's what I'm saying. What state does he live in?
Idaho.
I knew it. Get it? Josiah writes, even if the new episode... Here, I'll do my Josiah Crones impression, because this is what he sounds like. Even if the new episode is just Craig yammering his slimy status jaw off, at least there is a new episode. Ass.
That's the best virgin impression I've ever heard.
Oh my gosh.
I tried to channel my inner virgin, and hopefully I succeeded for you people.
You people, careful.
Yeah, and by you people, I mean all you from Idaho. All right, so final words for this episode, Joe Ruiz.
I appreciate you guys having me on for affirmative action purposes.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were talking about Mexican stuff, so we had to have you on. So we were saying,
exactly.
Because if Greg... I think go on, man. Can you give me a rendition of Mexican Americans from Cheech and Chong?
I'm not familiar.
Oh!
Who are Cheech and Chong?
Oh, just stop. Kidding. I'm just breaking kidding. My heart.
Hey, this could probably be two episodes. So when you decide to take another 6-month break, at least we'll have something at the 3-month mark.
You know what? You can S my whole D.
I kind of wish we'd have started out with, this is the We Are Libertarians crew. Chris Spangles, incredibly well rested.
If only that were true. All right. Well, Joe, it was a pleasure not seeing you. What, because he's on Skype? No, I love Joe. Joe's wonderful.
So, Joe, you had nothing for your soapbox, nothing to watch in the news, nothing to pay attention to?
How about promote yourself a little bit? Come on, man.
The cap?
Nothing, man. I've been kind of laying low, and I'm trying to be healthy and be a good employee and all that good stuff.
He's chilling out.
Probably, yeah.
Probably smoking weed like a pothead.
No, but if Gary Johnson's listening to this and he wants to offer me a job in his new venture, I'd be more than happy to show him my resume.
Well, because Gary Johnson has time to listen to this.
Well, he's only making a dollar.
He is only making a dollar.
So imagine how great those benefits and salary would be.
Yeah. Gregory?
The only thing I'd say is definitely pay attention to the this case about Obamacare, because this could be the nail in the coffin. Not kidding. If you don't qualify for subsidies in your states on the federal exchange, this thing falls apart. You're talking about premium skyrocketing exponentially. The other thing is watch.
Sorry, was I smiling? Let me stop doing that.
Yeah, right. The other thing is to watch for ISIS to make a strong move towards Baghdad, and then Lebanon's probably going to be next. And then we're going to really start to see whether this caliphate's even possible.
You know, when at the beginning of the podcast, instead of the Supreme Court, you said that the Obamacare thing was going to the Supremes.
Mm-hmm.
And to show you how out of it I am, I thought, why would they put Obamacare in the hands of Diana Ross?
Right.
A terrible idea.
That crazy woman. She's going to do nothing but rule that free pain pills for everybody.
Racist.
It's not racist. What? She's a pill head. It's not racist. Well, I'm terrible. I really need to think about my behavior. I really do.
And you're going to take 3 months to think about it.
I need to go sit in a corner and think about the way that I have behaved today.
I hear Nova Scotia is a great place to go away to. Be quiet, get some fishing in.
You mother. Canada, you son of a bitch. You know what? Let's rank the things we hate on this podcast. Number one, Canada.
Josiah Crones.
Number two, Josiah Crones. All right, well, that has been an episode of We're Libertarians.
And really, it's 1 and 1A.
Really, yeah. I mean, it's kind of tied.
Yeah.
So, which would I fire a rocket at first?
If you live in Montana, you could do it simultaneously.
Oh, that's a great point. Oh, if anybody's got spare rockets, please send them my way.
Is that a burning bush? I'm pretty sure Yahweh just told me that I have a rightful claim to Montana.
All right, everybody. I have nothing for the soapbox. Thank you for listening. Love you, people. You're all great. Gina is alive. That's my soapbox. I heard from Gina. Greg has heard from Gina. Both of us have heard from her in the last 2 weeks. So Gina lives. I don't know when we'll wrangle her in here at some point to come and talk to you all. But
technically, it'll be a resurrection, will it not?
But she seems to be doing as well as Gina can do. See,
is that a woman joke?
No, that was a Gina joke. No, I love her to death. She's Gina. Gosh, yeah, we have to have her on next episode. One of the people, very concerned email, is Gina okay? We haven't heard from Gina. She's not been on the podcast for a while. I'm like, nah, Gina's been on vacation for 6 months.
We should have played it up and been like, Snowden took her with her.
Yeah. Here's a fun fact for all of you people. This is, I teased this on the last one, but I never got to it. And I just assume that if you're listening at minute 153, it's maybe shorter because of edits. I said some things that I regretted immediately, and we've edited those out. I never have to edit either of you out, just me. If you go back and you listen to the episode where we took the first long hiatus, and it's the last episode Gina is on, that is the night that my wife left me and walked out of the door. And I realized that's what she was doing in the middle of that podcast. So we have a really good one. I'm all chatty. I'm talking. Having a great time, and then you just hear me go silent.
Yep.
And it's because Greg, Gina, and I are watching drama unfold silently. It was like a silent picture of divorce happening in the background. It was very, very surreal.
All I could think about was, man, his bachelor party next time is going to be awesome.
Oh, there will be no second marriage.
Seven and Brown Ripple.
The Brown Ripple, yes. One of the edits. Thank you, Joe. And I accidentally said Brown Ripple. So we had to take that out. But yeah, that's what caused the first long hiatus for like the first month or two. It took me forever to edit it, put it out, because I didn't want to sit there and listen. And I still haven't put out Storytime with Gina. I hope I can find it because it was with her son. Basically, my wife was mad that I forgot to tell her that Greg was coming over that night and Gina. So she got mad, and I got divorced for this podcast, okay? I lost a wife for this thing.
That's commitment to liberty, my
friend.
Hard choices.
That's right. No.
Brutalist.
Maybe that's a little too much info. Hey, Joe, can you text me 154, please? All right. Thank you all for listening. That is for the dedicated fans. I know you all, you little gossip mongers, are all immediately going back to look at the last time Gina was on to download that. I'm sure it was a great episode. I don't remember it. I just remember crying a lot afterwards. Best thing that's ever happened. So, yeah, that was episode 75. So we recorded that like February 2nd, February 4th. And I didn't put it out till February 18th. And then I take the next few shows off, and then I return, and then we get real sketchy. So, yeah. Little fun wall fact for you all. So there's been two fights in the history of the show that will live in infamy. There was the one where Creighton and Chris Galt fought and had and came to somewhat nerd blows after they got in a fist fight after the show. And then there was the one where my wife and I fought and you didn't hear it.
Well, you got hit by Maya when I
that's right.
Public education.
There's been a lot in this show.
I loved it that I supported public education and you got hit. This is kind of fantastic, actually.
Yes, but as every parent knows, I was the safe one, you know?
Yeah.
Maya knew that she could get away with hitting me. All right, guys. Thank you for listening. We love you all, except Josiah Crones. And Roger Paxton, you're on notice because you might be on Greg's list soon. We'll see after this episode. All right, guys, thank you for listening to this episode of We're Libertarians. And as always, we promise
to do better next time.